From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump has fired his Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, and nominated the Director of Central Intelligence, Mike Pompeo, as his replacement. Mr. Trump, speaking with reporters as he prepared to board Air Force One, said he made the decision while Tillerson was in Africa. He said he found they disagreed on matters such as the Iran nuclear agreement.
I made that decision by myself. Rex wasn't, as you know, in this country. I made the North Korea decision with consultation from many people, but I made that decision by myself.
You and Rex go on about
that. I actually got along well with Rex, but really, it was a different mindset. It was a different thinking.
He lauded Pompeo as having tremendous energy and intellect, and Mr. Trump added they are on the same wavelength.
I think Mike Pompeo will be a truly great Secretary of State. I have total confidence in him.
Tillerson later addressed an audience at the State Department.
I'm delegating all responsibilities of the Office of the Secretary to Deputy Secretary of State Sullivan. My commission as Secretary of State will terminate at midnight, March the 31st. Between now and then, I will address a few administrative matters related to my departure and work towards a smooth and orderly transition for Secretary of State designate Mike Pompeo.
Meanwhile, Mr. Trump selected Deputy CIA Director Gina Haspel to replace Pompeo. Both require Senate confirmation. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, at least 40 people were killed in ethnic violence in Ituri province in the country's northeast involving Hema cattle herders and Lendu farmers. Dozens have been killed in recurring violence, believed to be much over land access since December. Tensions date back more than a decade. This is VOA News. In Syria's besieged rebel-held eastern Ghouta region, dozens were medically evacuated Tuesday, under the auspices of the Syrian Arab Red Crescent, the first to be allowed to leave since a government offensive was launched 3 weeks ago to break the rebel grip. This evacuee said she's thankful to be out. She said her diabetic son did not have access to insulin. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said 150 were allowed to leave, even as airstrikes and shelling of the region continued. More than 1,100 have died since the offensive was launched February 18th. In Geneva, UN Deputy High Commissioner for Human Rights, Kate Gilmore, said tens of thousands of children are still trapped in eastern Ghouta.
How can it be that we would allow such a cost to be borne by children, such a loss of children to be accepted? Is it not tantamount to monstrous indifference to the suffering of children?
The UN said more than 900 Syrian children were killed in violence last year alone. Britain is preparing its response as a midnight deadline came and went for Russia to explain how a military-grade nerve agent felled a former Russian double agent in southern England a week ago. Prime Minister Theresa May issued the deadline Monday after concluding the nerve agent was Russian in manufacture. So far, no suspects have been arrested. Neil Basu is the senior national coordinator for the Metropolitan Police.
It's a painstaking operation to identify anyone of interest to this inquiry and eliminate them or include them. But at this stage, we are not declaring a person of interest or a suspect at this time.
President Donald Trump was among world leaders lending support to the British-held conclusion that Russia was involved. He spoke by phone with Prime Minister May about the attack on Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia March 4th. President Trump traveled to California Tuesday to tour the Mexican border and examine prototypes of walls being considered to cut down on illegal immigration and drug trafficking.
If you don't have a wall system, we're not going to have a country. The fact is, if you don't have a wall system, it would be bedlam, I imagine.
Mr. Trump has asked Congress for $18 billion to build the wall. He also criticized communities that offer sanctuary to illegal immigrants. Thousands of Ethiopians have crossed into Kenya seeking refuge after soldiers killed several civilians in a botched security operation targeting separatist militants. The soldiers killed 9 civilians Sunday, believing they were members of the Oromo Liberation Front. A congressional race Tuesday in Pennsylvania, seen by many as a chance for voters to express their views on President Trump, has gone down to the wire. A fraction of 1% of votes separates the Democrat and the Republican. Wheelchair-bound yet well-known intellectual British physicist Stephen Hawking, author of the best-selling book A Brief History of Time, has died. Hawking was 76. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Boateng in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A presidential runoff election has been announced in Sierra Leone.
Based upon the election law, no candidate actually pulled the expected 55% to have won the elections on the first ballot. So the Chief Electoral Commissioner has announced that there is going to be a second ballot, which is the runoff.
Abra Masekwa is the spokesman for Sierra Leone's Elections Commission. At least 107 political parties are expected to contest this year's Zimbabwe presidential election. Burundi goes to court over the election of Rwanda as Speaker of the East African Legislative Assembly. And the DRC government says opposition leader Moise Katumbi is free to return home, but first he must solve his legal problems.
It is not the government who is having a fight with Katumbi. It is the judiciary. Katumbi is free to come back as he was free to get out for treatment. But still, he has a problem with the justice.
Lambert Mende is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. UN investigators call for accountability and justice in South Sudan and Burundi. And U.S. lawmakers weigh in on the sacking of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. There will be a runoff election in Sierra Leone on March 27 between the opposition Sierra Leone People's Party candidate, retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio, and the ruling All People's Congress Party candidate, Samura Kamara. National Election Commission spokesman Albert Masekwai said none of the two got the 55% needed to win the March 7th first-round poll. He said Mada Bio got 43.3% of the vote, while Mr. Kamara secured 42.7%. In third place is National Grand Coalition candidate Kanda Yomkela with 6.9%. Spokesman Masekwai says the commission conducted a good first round and is ready to duplicate the same in the runoff.
Of the two leading candidates, the opposition presidential candidate, Julius Mada Bio, pulled 43% of the election's results, closely followed by the ruling government candidate, Samora Wilson Kamara, who pulled 42% of the votes. And based upon the election's law, no candidate actually pulled the expected 55% to have won the elections on the first ballot. So the Chief Electoral Commissioner has announced that there is going to be a second ballot, which is the runoff.
So when will the runoff take place?
According to the Chief Electoral Commissioner, the runoff is going to take place 2 weeks from the day of announcement. That is Tuesday, the 27th of March, 2018.
Did this factor into your preparation for the elections? In other words, will you be ready for the March 27th runoff?
Yes, according to the laws of Sierra Leone, runoff is always part of the provisions legally. In the event it happens, and in this case that happens, we're just implementing the preparations that we've put together to ensure that within 2 weeks we are able to put all what it takes to conduct the elections.
Albert, overall, how do you think your commission did in the preparation and the execution of the first round vote?
Generally, it has been very good in the sense that we were able to meet our benchmarks, the targets that we set for ourselves. And more importantly, the elections, if we can take it from the reports that have come in from various stakeholders, including elections observers, generally, it is a clean bill of health for the fact that we are yet to get any individual that is that much critical about the elections. All the political parties have been very much appreciative of the fact that we are able to conduct the elections. Even during the process, when there were issues of electoral disputes regarding alleged overvoting, as the case may be, and the commission had to, as a way of doing some dispute resolution, employ the issue of doing recounts of ballots to the satisfaction of political parties and their agents. So when the final results were out, the political parties were all happy. At least they appreciated the fact that whatever concerns they had, the commission took these concerns on board and we were able to ensure that we do what is expected within the legal framework. From the point of view of the commission, we did pretty well and we are patting ourselves on the back now and we're getting ready for the runoff in 2 weeks' time.
The last time we talked, your commission had been asked to do a recount by the opposition SLPP. Did you do the recount and was the SLPP satisfied?
Well, not only the SLPP, all other political parties, including the ruling party and about five political parties, actually wrote to the commission regarding the issue of recount. And the recount was done in the open, wherein all political parties, their agents, observers, including international observers, were present. And after the recount, the results that were generated were appreciated by all political parties and stakeholders, including the SLPP, because we ensured that within the law, we are able to do all of these recounts all over the country and ensure that the results that we announced as a commission was reflective of the wishes of the people, including the recount.
Albert, thank you very much again. Always nice to have you on Daybreak Africa.
You're welcome, James.
Albert Masekwa is spokesman of the National Elections Commission of Sierra Leone. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission says at least 107 political parties are expected to contest this year's general elections. Commissioner Kubani Moyo says it is unlikely that all of these parties will field national presidential, parliamentary, and local government candidates. The 107 parties will include the newly formed National Patriotic Front Party, which is linked to former President Robert Mugabe. Its members include most of those fired or sacked from the ruling ZANU-PF, including former First Lady Grace Mugabe and Professor Jonathan Moyo. Commissioner Kubani Moyo spoke with Gabe Dube of VOA's Zimbabwe service about the 107 political parties as well as the status of the voters' roll.
So far, we have 107 parties that have indicated as that they exist in the party politics of Zimbabwe. There are obvious questions that will come on whether all the 107 parties will field presidential candidates. We are not sure whether that will be the case, but judging by history and what has happened in the past, not all these parties usually field candidates for presidential. Normally, we have seen a situation where there are about five, six or thereabouts candidates that stand for presidential elections. The rest of the parties usually will field candidates for House of Assembly and also field candidates for the council elections. Now, for us, it doesn't matter which party comes into existence. Ours is to ensure that there is a freeness, credibility in the whole process, and we are referees that don't take a side, but give balanced adjudication to all parties that are in competition.
We are told that the National Patriotic Front that is linked to former President Robert Mugabe has indicated that it will be participating in the elections. Give us an update of that.
If my recollection is okay, I've also read in the newspapers that they have actually written to the commission informing us about their existence. As a commission, we have no powers to reject any political party that comes, like I said, that we don't register parties. There is no requirement in terms of the law. We are not really concerned on who is backing that party. We are not concerned on who is in the membership of the party. The former president might be in support of that particular party. For us, it's really a non-event. Ours is to bring a level playing field for all players so that there is fairness and there is credibility of the elections.
Now, lastly, Mr. Moyo, we see that you are now collating the numbers of people that actually registered in the new voters' roll. How are you going to store that information? We've had some parties complaining that they need a pretty good update from you guys. So are you going to do it, or maybe that's not their business?
We have been engaging political parties continuously and updating them. As you speak in Bulawayo, there was a stakeholder engagement, mutual engagement civil society, and some political player. There was a similar meeting in Harare, in which we're also informing people about the provisional statistics that has been decrypted. This commission is an approach that is participative, in which we are ensuring that at every level and every stage of the electoral process, we are moving with our stakeholders, because we know that they are key players in the whole process. So the figures that we have decrypted, the provisional figures, have been made public to the political players. We expect that the whole process is going to be done most likely next week, and we should be able to give out the full information. So we are very open. We'll give people that information. And once we are done with the whole process, we'll open the voters' roll for inspection.
That was Commissioner Kubani Moyo of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission speaking with viewers Gabe Dube from Zimbabwe's second largest city, Bulawayo. Today is Wednesday, March 14th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is now coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. The Democratic Republic of Congo's government says opposition leader Moise Katumbi is free to return home, but first he must solve his legal problems. Katumbi announced Monday this week in South Africa that he will return home in June to run in the presidential election scheduled for December this year, but he faces a possible sentence of 3 years in jail for a property deal for which he has spent the last 2 years in self-imposed exile. DRC Information Minister Lambert Mende says Katumbi is free to return home just as he was free to leave the country. But Mende said Katumbi cannot use running for president to avoid facing justice.
He's lying, saying that they are preventing him to come back because nobody sent him out. He was the one who asked to go out. Is it free to come back as he was free to get out? There is nothing more to add to that. There is no link between elections and a judicial file. That is the trick, James. You cannot avoid your responsibility toward judiciary by saying I'm running for elections so I can, you know, steal the money of people, you know, taking the houses of people, and they cannot sue me to court. That is stupidity. So he was free to go out and he is free to come back. But still, he is responsible for his act. Some people are suing him to justice. He will respond. If he wants to run for elections, he will run.
Listening to you, it seems to me the government is not ruling out arresting Mr. Katumbi upon his arrival.
The government will not arrest anybody because it is not the duty of the government to sue someone. Katumbi has a problem with the justice. James, there is a separation between the government and the justice, exactly like in the United States of America, the country where you live. It is not the government who is having a fight with Katumbi. It is the judiciary. So please, let the government alone with this problem. Katumbi is free to come back as he was free to get out for treatment. But still, he has a problem with the justice. So if the justice wanted to hear him, he will be caught by the justice. That is two things different. Don't mix it.
He has declared he wants to run for president. If you go after him, people will think that your government fears him, that the fact that he might be elected.
It is not a file linked to the government. We are informed that Katumbi has a problem with the judiciary. And he is telling you lie that the government is preventing him to come. It is a problem between him and the prosecutor, not between him and the government. The government is not the prosecutor.
Bring us up to date, Mr. Minister. Is President Kabila going to stand for election or he's not going to stand for election?
If you have information of someone who is already registered as a candidate, James, you will tell me. I'm not aware. Nobody has been registered for being a candidate or not being a candidate. We are not yet aware. We are waiting June and July to be informed. We do things, each thing at its time. Time has not yet come. We are not making elections all the time. We are waiting June and July. We shall know who is running, who is not running. And Kabila till now has not said that he will run. So it is useless to be talking all the time, Kabila, not Kabila. Let's wait, the time will come and you will see if he will run or not. Time has not come. Even Katumbi is just making us foolish for nothing.
Lambert Mende is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. In separate reports to the UN Human Rights Council, UN investigators described widespread and gross violations of human rights in South Sudan and Burundi and are calling for the victims to receive justice. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
South Sudan is suffering from one of Africa's most brutal wars. More than 4 years of fighting has brought the country to its knees, with nearly 6 million people facing hunger, more than 4 million internally displaced, and 2 million living as refugees in neighboring countries. The Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan describes the civilian population as at the mercy of fighters and criminal gangs who commit the most unbearably cruel atrocities with impunity. It says the warring parties must abide by the peace agreement they signed in 2015. The chair of the commission, Yasmin Suka, tells the council the hybrid court for South Sudan required in the agreement should be set up right away. Suka says the hybrid court will not be able to deal with the staggering number of violations in South Sudan, but it can make perpetrators legally accountable for their crimes. She says witnesses are anxious to testify and evidence for trials can be gathered both inside and outside the country.
Our work so far has barely scratched the surface of the violations we believe have occurred. More worrying is that we did not have to search too hard for corroborated accounts of astounding cruelty, dehumanization, and ethnic persecution. We have indeed struggled to do justice to the scale and intensity of the horror we documented.
Paulino Wanawila Onango, Minister of Justice and Constitutional Affairs of South Sudan, calls the report repetitious and flawed. He says the human rights situation in his country has improved and rejects the commission's assertion that people commit crimes with impunity. Meanwhile, the three-member Commission of Inquiry on Burundi finds no improvement in the political, security, economic, social, and human rights situation in Burundi since its last report to the Council in September. Commission member Françoise Hampson says many political opponents of President Pierre Nkurunziza, journalists and human rights defenders, remain in exile.
Members of civil society organizations who are still present in Burundi are under constant pressure or facing arrest. The commission received a great deal of information and testimonies to cases of harassment and violence committed by public officials and or members of the ruling party's youth league, the Imbonerakure, against individuals who may vote no or who refuse to enroll on voters' lists for the referendum.
Dozens of people have been arrested for supporting a no vote in an upcoming referendum that could allow the president to extend his term in office. Hampson says people remain under constant threat of abuse.
These cases supplement other human rights violations, specifically arrests and arbitrary detentions, torture and ill treatment, disappearance and violation of the right to an effective appeal and to a fair trial.
Burundian Ambassador Renovat Tabu was scathing in his response. He questioned the legitimacy of the commission. He rejected the report, saying it lacked credibility as it was riddled with false allegations about the human rights situation in Burundi. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Lawmakers of the East African Legislative Assembly have called on the six member states to remain united in order to achieve the regional body's goal of integration. This comes as the East African Court of Justice is expected to hear next week a case filed by Burundi against the election of a new regional assembly speaker from Rwanda. Moses Aviarimana has details from Bujumbura.
In December last year, Burundi and Tanzania boycotted the elections of the new East African Legislative Assembly Speaker, Martin Ngoga of Rwanda. Burundi said it was the time to provide the speaker, as by the Assembly, the Treaty for the East African Community under Article 9 indicates that the speaker is elected by the members from among themselves on a rotational basis. But since Burundi and Rwanda joined the community at the same time, there was no law or rule that clarified on such instances, as Burundi indicated that the speakership was on a rotational basis and not to be competed for. The Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni last month called on the assembly to stay focused.
These elections are not just elections. These are not employment bureaus. You are not here to give jobs to jobless people. You are here to select people to support the integration of East Africa.
Next week, the East African Court of Justice will be hearing the application made by the Burundi Attorney General Sylvestre Nyandwi that calls the court to nullify the election of the current Regional Assembly Speaker Martin Ngoga. Florence Sajan is a Kenyan lawmaker.
But I would ask the relevant chapters, that is Burundi, that we all believe in sovereignty, that if in good spirits and good development of the community, I will take the opportunity to ask that let that matter rest for us to work together for the betterment of this Yala.
Freddy Mkasambide, a lawmaker from Uganda, is expected to represent the East African Legislative Assembly at the court next week. He said that he will defend the eligibility of the speaker's election.
First of all, we have got authorities, and the jurisprudence is alive in the East African Court of Justice. I am extremely doubtful that we can go back to an election of the speaker, although, of course, courts can give decisions either way. In my opinion, there would be decisions calculated to have a repeat of an election, but among us, to prayers that are sought by the Republic of Burundi include even the suspension of the assembly itself. And in my opinion, I find that lackadaisical.
Martin Ngoga, a Rwandan national, was elected as the East African Legislative Assembly Speaker in a controversial circumstances as Burundi and Tanzania boycotted the elections. The current feud between Burundi and Rwanda reflects the already deteriorating relation between the two countries since 2015. Burundi had accused Rwanda of military training Burundi refugees to overthrow President Pierre Nkurunziza's government. In return, Rwanda accused Burundi of sheltering the FDLR rebels who are accused of committing the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Arusha, Tanzania.
The latest White House shakeup, including the sacking of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, provoked strong reactions on Capitol Hill on Tuesday, especially among Democratic lawmakers. VOA's Michael Bowman spoke with several senators and has this report.
News of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's ouster and the nomination of CIA Director Mike Pompeo to replace him spread like wildfire in the halls of Congress.
I just think it's unfortunate that we've had so much chaos around foreign policy, a lack of consistency, a lack of speaking with one voice.
I was very disappointed. I think he's done a great job. It'll be very interesting to see where we go from here.
To me, it's an incredibly challenging time for American diplomacy with this commander in chaos.
Democratic Senator Tim Kaine told VOA that, as a member of Congress, Mike Pompeo tended to endorse military solutions over diplomatic ones, making him an odd choice to serve as America's top diplomat. But senior Republican lawmakers disagree.
So I'm sorry to see Rex Tillerson go, but Mike Pompeo is an outstanding choice to succeed him.
Some question whether any Secretary of State can effectively discharge his duties under President Donald Trump.
Whenever you have a Secretary of State who says one thing on the world stage, and then you have the president totally undermine him and undercut him and pull the rug from underneath him, that creates instability in the world.
But the diplomatic opening with North Korea has persuaded some senators that, whatever Trump's governing style may be, it gets results.
All administrations have a differing point, a different management style. Clearly, this president has a different management style than other presidents have had in the past.
Last year, Trump abruptly fired then-FBI Director James Comey. Now Tillerson, a top member of his cabinet, has been shown the door.
And I think it was kind of bad form to not tell Secretary Tillerson. I mean, where I'm raised, that's just bad manners.
The chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Republican Bob Corker, told reporters the committee would consider Pompeo's nomination as quickly as possible. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. There will be a runoff election in Sierra Leone on March 27 between the opposition Sierra Leone People's Party candidate, retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio, and the ruling All People's Congress Party candidate, Samura Kamara. And that is it for this Wednesday, March 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good Wednesday.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is on a five-nation tour of Africa, and high on his agenda are talks on counterterrorism and advancing mutual ties with nations on the continent. On his first trip to Africa as America's top diplomat, he is expected to meet with leaders from Chad, Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Nigeria. U.S.-Africa relations is the topic on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, Africa.
This is Peter Clott, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.